roll call.
All right. Representative Wynn. Jagadasan Krishnamurthy.
Present.
Brian Kirkland. Eddie Cook.
Here.
David Byers.
Here.
J.R. Sloan.
Here.
Lev Gonick.
Here.
Rebecca Pereira for Richard Stavnik.
Here.
And Ryan Murray.
I am here.
Okay. We are ready to go. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Donna. Well, welcome to this month's edition of ITAC, everybody. We have a smaller agenda than the last month, so we will not work you as hard. But we do appreciate your time and attention to these projects coming before us. I do want to remind everybody that this is a public meeting and we do take comments. There is a link in the agenda if you wish to submit a comment. I will go ahead and ask staff if we received any conflict of interest forms with regard to any items on the agenda this month.
Yes, JR, we have.
Okay. And as I understand, that was Mr. Byers, who will be recusing himself from exhibit or the item number two related to the courts on the agenda. So we'll note that now. And again, as we get to that item, that he will be recusing himself from the votes. Were there any others?
No.
Nope. Okay. Again, members, I'll remind you, if we get to an item on the agenda and you believe you have a conflict, please go ahead and raise your hand at that time. And we will address it, and we'll have you fill out the forms. I'll say after the fact, but we will note in our meeting that if there was a conflict. So thank you for that. The next item we'll step into is our first item of business, which is approval of the September 20th recording as our minutes of our prior meeting.
Mr. Chair. I move to approve.
Thank you, Eddie. Do we have a second?
Mr. Chair, this is Jaggy. I second.
Thank you, Jaggy. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, thank you. All right, with that, we will get to our first item up for review and approval.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman.
Security. Go ahead, Bob. I'm sorry.
Sorry. No, that's all right. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Bob Mussey. I'm an engagement manager with the Department of Administration. I'm joined here today by members of the Department of Economic Security, who will introduce themselves shortly, followed by a brief overview of their project. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, the Arizona Department of Economic Security's Division of Technology Services is requesting approval to acquire privilege access management technology. This technology will allow DES to reduce manual processes, address audit findings, and increase their overall security posture. At this time, I'll turn it over to the project team to present additional information regarding the proposed project and answer any questions that you may have.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Carrie Allen. I'm here to present for the Department of Economic Security today. I am the Enterprise Technology Support Senior Manager here at DES. Joining me today is Mr. Dan Wilkins. He's our Chief Information Security Officer. Unable to attend today, but available for follow-up are Clayton Sykes and Mark Darmer. Next slide, please. Today, the operational issue that we are facing is that we have over 1,500 accounts with elevated rights throughout the environment, whether that's workstations or servers. Auditing and maintaining these accounts and making sure that they are regulated the way they're supposed to be is a challenge for us. So we're here because of this, and obviously with our audit findings that we mentioned earlier. We've also recently come into issues with end user computing services like printer installation. Many of you may remember a year or two back when things changed in the Microsoft environment. This required elevated rights for us to be able to do certain end user maintenance that was not otherwise requiring elevated privileges prior. One of the benefits of getting a privileged access management technology suite is that the administrators of the software will no longer have static passwords and will be able to have just-in-time access to systems instead of always-on access. The time-bound controls will help with inherent risk of privileged or elevated access rights throughout the environment. Once the product suite is in place, the software will also track and record all elevated privilege sessions, and this will help us in the long run with audits as well as security investigations. And lastly, managing workstations and server elevated access will be centralized through a privileged access management technology suite. Next slide, please. DES is looking to procure the Delinea Privileged Access Management Software Suite. This includes three tools: the Secret Server, Privileged Manager, and Access Manager. This will allow us to manage the elevated rights to servers and workstations with that fully recorded and auditable experience. DES's Privileged Access Suite that we're looking to procure will allow us to migrate away from manual processes for privileged access and audits. This tool will also allow us to implement just-in-time access instead of always-on access, lowering our security risk in the process. DES and Delinea will work together to configure the platform, and Delinea will train the administrators on the system for full post-implementation support. Finally, Delinea was presented DES with an innovative approach to privileged access management. It does more than just password management, which is what the core of privileged access management tools really was founded on. And this tool allows us to go beyond that and implement more innovative tools going forward. Next slide, please. We did evaluate five different vendors listed here, all of which are on state contract. Delinea offered the best fit for DES's privileged access requirements overall. The technology itself comes with three products, as mentioned before: Secret Server, Privileged Manager, and Access Manager. All three will be implemented as part of this project. Next slide, please. DES will be responsible for updating requirements as needed and data discovery. As part of the project, the vendor, Delinea, would be responsible for project discovery, training, and product support. Both Delinea and DES would be responsible for implementation, integration, and project management. Next slide, please. This project will kick off in November of 2023 and will progress and be concluded by the end of June in 2024. On this slide, you can find the years 1 through 5 financial projections for the Delinea software and implementation. Next slide. As part of our success, DES is looking to implement just-in-time privileged access for 30% of the environment, servers, and workstations by the end of June 2024, and 100% of the environment by the end of June 2025. We're also looking to implement check-in and check-out time-bound access, get that configured for all of the systems that are implemented by the end of June 2024. And finally, we are looking to resolve 20% of our open privileged access audit findings for internal and external audits by the end of June 2024, and 80% by the end of June 2025. Next slide. Do you have any questions?
All right, thanks, Carrie. I will turn it over to the committee members if you have any questions. Go ahead, Rebecca.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it might skip ahead just a little bit on the agenda, but it sounds like the goal for implementation is 30% by the end of the project date of June 2024, and 100% a year later. Does ASSET continue to follow the project all the way through 2025, or is the project complete in 24?
Go ahead, Chuck.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Ms. Pereira. So right now, the way the pitch is designed, we would track the project through closure at 2024. However, as we see and later on in the agenda, we'll be talking about some new practices we're putting in place where we'll have follow-up on measured outcomes, past end dates and projects. So this, for example, would go into that process that we're currently creating where in 2025, we come back and ask for an agency report out. We still haven't figured out the level that we'll bring that back to the ITAC committee, whether it's going to be some kind of semi-annual basis, but we are setting up those processes, and this would be one project that falls into them.
All right, thanks, Chuck. Any other questions from the committee? If not, I'll turn it back to you, Bob.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. ASSET is recommending that this PIDG be approved with the conditions as presented.
Okay, committee members, any questions on the conditions? If there are no questions, I will take a motion with regard to the project.
Mr. Chairman, this is Dave. I move adoption or approval of the project with the conditions as presented.
Thanks, Dave. Do we have a second?
Mr. Chair, I second.
Thank you, Eddie. Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, that's unanimous. Congratulations, Carrie and team. Go forth and implement. All right, we'll move on to our next item on the list. And again, I will go ahead and note for the record, Mr. Byers will be recusing himself from the vote on this item. This has to do with the Administrative Office of the Courts and their engagement monitoring system.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Haley Greenberg. I'm an engagement manager with the Department of Administration. I'm joined here today by members of the Arizona Supreme Court who will introduce themselves after a brief overview of the project. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, in accordance with Senate Bill 1720, the Arizona Supreme Court was tasked with implementing a solution to enhance court supervision and monitoring. The courts are requesting approval for a pilot electronic monitoring solution between justice-involved individuals regarding court-mandated obligations such as event agendas and check-in confirmations. The solution will provide a method of monitoring justice-involved individuals' cell phones for compliance using geolocation, curfew data, and other identification features to check if the justice involved individual is within respective time blocks, leading to increased public safety and individual compliance with court-ordered terms. Excuse me. At this time, I will turn this over to the project team to present additional information regarding the proposed project and answer any questions you may have.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Great. I'm chiming in from a phone and a computer, so let me know if you cannot hear me. Thank you so much, Haley, for that introduction. My name is Shanda Breed. I'm the Director of Adult Probation Services with the Arizona Supreme Court. Also on the call is our team, Carl Heckert, Director of IT, Martin Gazzola, our CFO, who may or may not be joining us just yet, Elise Kulik, our legislative liaison, and Amy Champeau, our program specialist, also with Adult Probation Services, who will be joining me in this presentation today. Next slide. So thank you again, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thanks for allowing us to present today on this project investment justification for this funding and the technology program that we have now been able to coin, engagement monitoring. If you did or did not know, at any given time, there are, this slide says nearly, but it's currently over 80,000 adult felons, approximately
3,000 juvenile offenders, and additionally 6,000 individuals who are on pretrial release, all with some type of term and condition of probation that we have to supervise and monitor. For these cases, under these types of supervision, the court's order for public safety purposes, some conditions such as curfew, house arrest, exclusion zone area that they can't go into or need to stay away from. Often the court orders ankle bracelets or GPS monitoring. So what are the issues behind that? It's all really good because it's for public safety, but our response and how we can respond is part of that issue. So for those types of extensive monitoring, it usually means for probation officers and pretrial officers, additional checks, field work to verify their compliance out in the community, additional funding for ankle monitoring equipment, not having enough ankle monitors due to many demands of one, the factories that create them, and two, immigration agencies that are needing them at this time. And another huge issue is that with extensive monitoring, it takes more manpower from our officers. And so if you didn't know, we're currently in a probation crisis and we're not able to hire and retain enough POs due to low pay. So we were provided this opportunity to develop this pilot project to use this new electronic monitoring technology to strengthen our supervision, to help officers communicate and engage with offenders, and ultimately to assist with a greater compliance of the offender's terms, which we hope leads to reducing recidivism and increasing appearance rates in courts. Next slides. And I may have jumped ahead just a little, but these two slides tie in together. What are the benefits for us and what is the proposed solution? So for us, probation, pretrial, the officers, how it helps us is that this app that we're hoping to utilize, we can do quick check-ins. We can make these check-ins random, or we can request that the offender out in the field in their community on any given second, you know, do a check right then and there. This will also benefit us by providing 24/7 monitoring, virtual call or like a FaceTime approach and connection, virtual appointments, curfew monitoring. We can set up drug testing reminders, court reminders. We can set up the whole calendar for them that we can share. They can see their terms and conditions on their phones. We can even send a mass communication, like don't come into the office today because it's snowing or something like that, or don't come into court because there's an emergency. We can send other mass communication of incentives, like great job this week, you've been doing a great job. For them, for the probationer, for the folks that are offenders on pretrial supervision or juvenile supervision, they have direct access to their officers by way of phone. If they don't have a phone, this program can purchase a phone, which will have the app installed. So if someone loses a phone number or a phone or their phone breaks, once they get another phone, they can re-engage immediately by logging into the app. They never lose their communication history, their text message and call history. They never lose maybe what was uploaded into the app. It still stays all right there on the application. The text message feature is one that's really grand as well. Not only can they have immediate access to their officers, but the officer side, we can take that text message information and print it off for any verification that we need on the court side. The offender can also validate quickly their compliance by taking a picture of maybe their community service or their pay stub or their treatment completion without having to manually, you know, drive over and come into the office to submit those documents. They're able to also see resources online and set up maybe a sobriety tracker lots of options for them and resources at their fingertips. A huge benefit for the offender too, and something that we really wanted with this technology, these folks can stop losing their jobs so much by coming into the probation office so much, right? So they can stay on their job sites. They can send a picture to us or verification of where they're at right there from their job site or wherever they may be without having to spend the time by coming into the office. Next slide. So this proposed solution, we've already completed an RSP for electronic monitoring. We made sure to focus on that this was a communication by way of cell phone only. So we don't want to replace ankle monitoring, but we definitely wanted to make this something that was a benefit for both the officers and the court, and also the offender or juvenile person on the other end. We wanted to make sure that it was engaging. We wanted to make sure that there was open communication, but that it also confirmed identity. It detects their location, right? So we're able to really help with their monitoring. We wanted to base this on risk. So not all those who are on supervision will be engaged with this program, but we're looking at to guide us to the right folks who need to be on the program. We hope the main solution for all of this will not only create intrinsic motivation and confidence for the offender to do more and to comply more, but also to ultimately lower recidivism. Next slide. Actually, stay right there, Haley. Go back to the next. Yep, there you go. And I'm going to hand it over to Amy.
Great. Thanks, Shanda, and thanks, Chairman and members of the committee. I'll continue. And I was part of the RFP committee. Shanda has kind of outlined what we've done, but we did go through the process, inviting people to apply to become vendors for us. We did have 8 submissions for that. Out of those, the committee members, the RFP committee members, selected 5 to conduct a demonstration with us. And in July, we met and selected our preferred vendor, who actually met and exceeded all of the requirements listed within the RFP. Many of those features Shanda has already listed here. But we were just uber impressed with the ability for officers to be able to communicate with pretrial defendants, probationers, in something as simple as texting, with read receipts, all the way through location verification, similar to what we might find on an iPhone with a Find My app. So all of that was met. And then if we could move to the next slide, please. And so as far as responsibilities, how we have divided this out with the vendor. So what we are responsible for is the Supreme Court and AOC staff. We are working with local probation departments to determine the best use for them by breaking it down into communication with individual units within each probation department. So, you know, by that, we're looking at kind of doing some advertising or marketing of what the product has to offer and sharing that with very small units in each probation department. And then we are reviewing and ideally approving procedures as each unit or each probation department request to use the application. And then we're following up with each supervisor in the said unit or probation department that participates in the program so that we can identify benefits, determine if ongoing training is needed, and discussing some trends. As far as the vendor and what they are responsible for, they are in the midst of programming custom fields to meet the needs and verbiage that is standard for us in the probation world here in Arizona. For example, one of their screens says violation, and really that's not a violation for us. We look at that very differently in the probation and pretrial world. So we're asking them to change that to alert. So they're making different programming customizable for us. The vendor's also going to be offering ongoing and as requested demonstrations and training for staff. and then for our justice involved individuals after staff have been trained. And they are also in the midst of learning the data needs for each local department, as well as us as a state as a whole, and so that they can do data pulls if they're not yet in existence within the application, and then providing that information to both the AOC and local probation departments. Together are our shared solutions, and what we're working together on is we've just created a list of dates with open houses where there will be online demonstrations for staff that want to learn about the product. We together are meeting with each team that wants to participate and then following up with staff training. And that would be the vendor offering it on the training online, as well as providing a representative from their company in the room with our probation staff and AOC staff being present in the room with the probation staff. And we are meeting in that same manner with justice involved individuals to participate. Next slide, please. And so our timeline here is relatively self-explanatory. I don't want to read it to you. I will share that we're actually a little bit ahead of schedule. We have developed training plans and communicated with all of the juvenile and adult probation departments around the state, as well as pre-trial staff who may be working outside of our probation departments and directly for the courts. Our first training is scheduled for this Friday, October 20th, with a small group of both pre-trial officers and transferred youth probation officers on the adult side, and that'll be down in Tucson. And then we're going to continue these smaller rollouts for the remainder of the calendar year and throughout the winter, which will ideally create momentum locally. And then in the spring, we'll continue to offer trainings, incorporating larger groups if needed, until all of our high-risk pretrial individuals are on and using the application, and the probation teams who would benefit from increased communication and some of the tools that this application offers have had the opportunity to be trained. And then moving on to the next slide, please. So these are some of our numbers. You can see in fiscal year 24, because we're getting a little bit late start here with some of the processes we had to go through, we're looking at just shy of $1.9 million being spent on this product. And then for fiscal year 25, we're just a little bit over $2.8 million being used. And that encompasses the grant funding that we've been given for this electronic monitoring product. So in subsequent years, anticipating that this program will be successful, as we look ahead into the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years, some ideas that we've bounced around include asking the legislature to refund us for use of the application and work with the vendor, and or seeking additional grants if needed. And if we need to, moving the cost of these application services to county probation departments if we're unable to obtain funding elsewhere. And then next slide, please. And so half of our project, half of the $5 million that we've been given between the two funding sources, half of it, as you can see, is APF. The other half is non-APF. Moving on to the next slide, please. Our project milestones almost mimic our timeline. So we're ensuring that as many people develop a plan and procedure to use the application as needed, that their staff receive training and then schedule their justice involved individual to be trained and use the app and include the app and its included communication tools. As we move through the timeline and milestones, you can see here that quantitatively, we're targeting pre-trials individuals to decrease failure to appear cases. And we expect to see a reduction in incarceration of those who fail to attend scheduled court dates. Qualitatively, we expect to see communication increased in both pre-trial and probation cases. We expect that the relationships through that improved communication that are assigned to staff will be more inclusive in supervision and feel less pressured for the individuals under supervision, thus being able to create goals and progress toward behavior change, which ultimately will decrease recidivism. Next slide, please. So thank you for your attention during our presentation, and Shanda and I and the rest of our team are happy to entertain questions if there are any.
All right, thanks, Amy and Shanda. Committee members, any questions with regard to the project? Okay, if there are none, I will turn it back to you, Haley.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, ASSET is recommending that the PIDGE be approved with the following conditions as presented.
Okay, I'll give you a moment to review, but I'll ask if there are any questions or discussion about the conditions. If there's none, I will take a motion with regard to the project.
Mr. Chair, Eddie, I move to approve.
Thanks, Eddie. Okay. Do I have a second?
Chair, this is Jaggi. I second.
Thanks, Jaggi. All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? And we've noted again that Mr. Byers has recused himself from this vote. Thank you very much. Great presentation, Shanda and Amy. Good luck with this implementation. I hope this pilot works out well.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Okay, next item up will be Department of Administration bringing forward a change request with regard to the State Parks Broadband Project. Chuck.
Mr. Chairman, just want to put it on the record because this is a verbal recording that Mr. Byers has come back to the committee.
He's back. Yeah, sorry. Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks, John.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Bob Mussey. I'm an engagement manager of the Department of Administration. I'm also joined here today by members of the Department of Administration who will introduce themselves shortly, followed by a brief overview of the project change request. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, on May 15th, 2023, ADOA ASSET approved the original project investment justification, page number AD23006, for the State Parks Broadband Project to start cycle one of what will end up being three cycles in total. The Department of Administration is requesting approval for a change request to include time, scope, and budget as the project moves into cycles two and three for a total of 18 parks. I will now turn it over to the project team to present additional information regarding the proposed change request and answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Stephen Jenkins. I'm a technical lead with ADOA ASSET EIC. Also joining me today is Linda Colwell from the State Parks and Trails as a business owner. Next slide, please. This is the original slide from the original PIDGE calling out the different benefits from bringing Wi-Fi, public Wi-Fi to state parks and supporting the areas, including the broadband build out to those state parks, how it can enrich potential acre of institutions, enrich different surrounding areas, unserved, underserved. All those have been working through the state park process for the first three parks in cycle one. Also, of course, includes the internet access to visitors to help research their plans, visit the trails, download maps, even interact with the up and coming state park application. Also, the public Wi-Fi has capabilities to help support the areas in doing a broadcast communications to anyone that's on that Wi-Fi in that park to say warn of a wildfire approaching or closed trails due to potential issues, damage, or even wild animals in those areas. So many benefits to these parks. All that's just increasing the more we roll through the different projects. Again, this was originally the benefits and still remain true today for the remaining parks that we were talking about today. Next slide, please. So the biggest change to this change request is the extension of our end date. We originally were planning on ending in June 2024 with cycle one. We are asking to extend this project to June 2026 so we can roll out this project to all 18 parks that have been vetted and selected through from the state parks and trails. For three parks for cycle one, the nine parks in cycle two, and six parks for cycle three. You'll see in the slides there's also a cycle four, which is the remaining parks that if there's any additional funds left over and time, we will vet through those parks to see if there's anything else we can help support in the list of parks that the state has. Our budget, the original grant was given at $20.6 million. The initial PIDGE came in at $2.1 million to support cycle three. So our ask, as we've also completed the IV&V vendor selection process, is to go for the full $20.6 million to support all 18 parks between now and the June 2026 timeframe. This falls well within the ARPA fund requirements, as those funds do expire on December 30th of 2026. Next slide, please. Through the first couple of months working with Cycle One for the parks, through several risks and changes that were brought to us, many of the changes needed to be done through a vetting of the parks information and working through multiple engagements from the State Historical Preservation Office, as well as the tribals needing to review the different drawings, cultural resource surveys, and other impacts that will take place on the land surrounding the park and in the park itself. When working through those cycles, the cycles itself for vetting analysis will take up to 26 weeks prior to even creating that initial project for the brown band before the shovel can even hit the ground. And I'll go into those steps, slides a little bit future on. Some of the needs that are required for state parks and trails, State Historical Preservation Society, and for the tribal to review are some of the cultural resource surveys to analyze those areas to see if there's been any type of digging, any type of groundwork on any of the areas that we are planning to put in fiber, to trench, to bore, even to have trucks and equipment on. If there's not been any documentation of that land, we will then have to have that land documented and analyzed and even provide a archaeologist on site for each day of those digs in case any artifacts or anything happens to come up during that dig process while the carrier equipment is on site. Because the required cultural resource surveys, catenary drawing, and approval from the state parks and SHPO, we also had to recreate a whole process with the carrier teams. Normally, an entire project is signed off, a capital budget account is created, and the carrier provides funding from that approval process to support the drawings and move forward. As we needed to have the cultural resource surveys, engineering drawings, and approvals from these different committees well before we were able to give approval to the carriers to start the projects, we had to work with the teams and create a new carrier service order process that involved legal and financial entities of the carriers and the state to be able to fund in front of the project being approved to get the needed necessary documents and requirements. Next slide, please. Oh, I apologize. Go back one more slide. Sorry. One other major risk to this entire project is that our current ISA between the Office of Strategic Planning and Budget and ADOA expires on June 24th. We have asked for an extension of that ISA, which is what funding the $20.6 million, to extend until June 2026 to fall on the timelines for these parks. Again, the current ISA, it does expire in June of 2024. If we are not granted an extension on our ISA, we will be working with multiple permit companies to at least get the first three parks that we've worked on in cycle one completed by the June 30th deadline. Next slide. Here's a high level of the timelines that we're following through with the new processes, engaging the Horse Circle Society, State Parks and Trails, Tribal, as well as the approval processes needed for the customer service orders through our four different cycles. And again, cycle four to be determined if there's any funding available after our initial 18 parks have been completed. Next slide, please. Here's a detailed look at that process that we are needing to go through before we can even approve the actual carrier project. We work through creating budgets, what the total costs are going to be. We get quotes from the companies that do the cultural resource surveys, quotes on what it costs to do the CAD level engineering drawings. Then we provide approvals for those to take place. And there's 4 to 6 weeks allowing the surveys to be completed, allowing the drawings to be done and sent back to the state. From there, it goes through a process that takes up to 45 days for SHPO and the tribal to finish their reviews. Once that's completed, approximately 26 weeks, if everything's green light, we are good to go and approve the carriers to start the true broadband build out of that fiber into the state park. Next question, next slide, please. Overall, is the budget over the next 3 years covering up until our June 30th, 2026 timeline? Most of these costs are based on estimates from what we received already in our first cycle of parks. We do, however, have true costs for the broadband piece. However, the cultural resource survey costs and the engineering drawings are done based upon estimates of the initial parks that we've done so far. We've received 6 of the Wi-Fi buildouts to again help us create estimates for the rest of the parks. And also keep in mind that that approval process has to be done not only for the broadband piece, but also when it's time to bring in, build out that wireless infrastructure inside of that park. That infrastructure inside the park also requires, again, engineer drawings, a cultural survey for any areas, vehicles or digging or pole installation will take place. Again, all that has to be put together, sent to the different areas for approvals, and then can finally be approved to carry on with the project. Overall, we're looking at approximately $18.3 million at this point for those 18 parks out of our $20.6 million budget. Next slide, please. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you very much for your time. I'll turn it over for any questions.
All right, I will open it up to the committee for questions. Eddie.
Mr. Chair, my question to the team, and again, I'm trying to remember from the last time, is there or was there any consideration of using technology like, you know, Starlink, you know, instead of having, you know, fiber that's, you know, brought to the parks, you know, is there, of course, I'm just thinking about innovations and technologies over the next 10 to 20 years, you know, instead of building out a lot of what I would call permanent infrastructure using fiber, why, you know, what was the rationale, reason maybe not to use other kind of technologies similar to like Starlink?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman of this committee. Great question. We actually are looking at Starlink and other potentially 5G, 4G technologies to actually work as a backup. The current parks, for the amount of coverage, amount of attendees, we're looking at the 1 to 5 gig range needed for the bandwidth at these parks to help support the public Wi-Fi, the internet connections that have been done through some of our analysis and checking. And to date, we have not been able to come close to those speeds with the current testing that have been done with Starlink, with some of the HughesNet and other state contract providers that we do have. As part of this project, during the milestone 3 is where the state park will be able to help increase their basically their state network as well. Any of their phone systems, any of their point of sale machines, staff communication points will also be able to ride on a secure segment of that fiber network. And that's where the backup will come in. Because if the public Wi-Fi goes down, it's a nice to have. It's a great feature. However, to keep the park running, we do need to keep those point of sale machines working, the ticket machines, the trails equipment, all the software that they use needs to be up and running. So Starlink will be brought in as a backup of failure, that if that fiber or network does go down, at least the state parks will remain up and running on that back-end technology to support all their day-to-day functions.
Okay, Rebecca.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Steve. Two questions. Have the parks been selected and in which phase? And if so, can we get an email of that phasing after the meeting?
Absolutely, thank you. Yes, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, we do have the parks were vetted through the state parks and trails based upon attendance, day use areas, overnight accommodations, other potential needs like a lake, a cave, museum, however those may play to the potential attendance as well as the increased attendance for those parks having Wi-Fi. We had that all labeled out, and I'll be happy to send it on to the committee.
Thank you. Second question is similar to Mr. Cook's in terms of efficiency. Have you considered working with DOA and ADOT, who also received funding to add EV chargers to the parks? I'm just thinking that if you're trenching for the infrastructure, dig a hole once instead of twice.
Thank you so much. Appreciate the question, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Yes, we are actually working with ADOT extensively. They are also helping us out for areas that they've got built out, as well as working even with the Department of Education for the E-rates and the program they've done with building out additional broadband expansions. We're even in turn helping out ADOT if needed in some of these broadband build outs. For example, some of the roads that we're putting fiber into, so they could be able to tap into that fiber to create road signs and help identify some mile markers or anything that they may need to help support their road system. Thank you.
Any other questions from the committee? Okay, I've got one. When I was looking at the financial slide, I saw a planned spend of like 18.3. You have a total ARPA allocation of 20.6. You've got a plan of 18 parks through phase three. So is the expectation that you would be coming back to the ITAC for anything in phase four and to, for any additional spend?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Chris Committee. That is correct. That anything beyond that 18.3 million, we will have to be back for a change request to identify the additional funds and the spending on what parks we can expand on.
Very good. Go ahead, Lev.
Hi, thanks for sharing the update, and I've got lots of shared bruises to share along the kind of experience you're up against, so I feel for you. Just two questions quickly. One is, I'm just assuming that right now you and the park system are not particularly concerned about the middle mile issue. I presume that as part of the RFP, you're assuming that the carriers are going to connect you back to some kind of internet meet me point. That's kind of a verification kind of question, and I'll let just respond to that first.
Thank you very much for the question. Yes, Mr. Chairman and the members of the committee, that is correct. The carriers that we're working with off the carrier and broadband contract that we have at the state today are providing the middle mile and even last mile in some cases. There are some last miles where there's going to be a wholesale selection, but again, we are also working on a new state RFP to help support the rural areas and trying to bring in some of the new carriers that have recently been building in the state of Arizona to get them on our state contract. Many of the sites so far were able to tie into their infrastructure. In some cases, we've been also been able to help speed up their build out of infrastructure in those communities to be able to support the parks. One example would be Cottonwood for Dead Horse Ranch. Lumen was able to help speed up and increase their fiber build out in the community of Cottonwood by approximately 4 months in anticipation to support this park that's going to be going live. Another area that's in phase two is Tombstone. Today, there is only one carrier in Tombstone. with this lumen connection and fiber of approximately 9 miles that we're putting in, we'll actually bring fiber directly into Lumen CO, which will then be able to provide carrier options for the city of Tombstone, as well as support better options for the high school, junior high, and businesses in that area.
Thanks. And that actually anticipated the second question, which maybe I can take offline as to not to burden the committee further right now. But I am interested in the actual procurement, which would allow, as you've just said, for cities and schools and so forth to take advantage of the build out that you're underwriting for the private carriers. So if it's all right, no need to burden. This is wearing my hat as the CIO for Arizona State University.
Thank you.
All right, thanks, Lev. Any other questions from the committee? If there are not, I'll turn it back to you, Bob.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Asset is recommending that the change request be approved with the conditions, the original conditions as presented.
Okay, any questions on the conditions? Okay, if there are none, I will accept a motion with regard to the project.
Mr. Chair, I move to approve.
Thank you, Eddie. Do we have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Byers. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. I'll say Jeggy and Lev, we didn't get your vote. You didn't come off mute. Lev and Jeggy, are you able to come off mute and give us a verbal or a thumbs up? There, okay, Lev's back with the end. He had to disconnect and reconnect. Lev, did you miss our vote?
I did, but I'm obviously, I tried to get in to actually be supportive of putting the vote to the motion to a vote, and so I'm favorable.
Okay, thank you. And Jeggy, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, and are you, what is your vote with regard to the project?
I'm voting.
I'm sorry, are you voting in favor?
I'm in favor, yes.
Okay, thank you very much. All right, that's a unanimous vote. Good luck continuing forward, Steve. We look forward to hearing more about the project as it progresses. All right, our final item, which is informational only, so there is no vote on this item. Is a presentation from our oversight audit project by the Department of Administration.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Charles Brown. I go by Chuck Brown. I'm joined here today by Halay Fardi as the business owner of this project and Lindsay DeFerrico as our project manager. Next slide, please. So to give you an introduction, this is not an ITAC approval project. This is a report out of business related matters for ITAC. So the background on this is ADOA Asset has undergone a performance audit with the Auditor General's office. And that audit was forwarded to you upon its release in July of this year. We're coming before you today to talk about what is in that audit and how ADOA Asset is responding to that audit and areas that may impact the committee, as well as to update you on the progress of our response. So as I said, in July of this year, the audit report came out. The findings are summarized on this slide. To go through them quickly, we have consistency issues that were reported on in regards to our review of status reports from agencies on projects approved at all levels of the oversight process. Connecting start and end dates between our PIDGE approvals and the actual projects as they track over time, and review of project expenditures. To explain this one, this is in regards to our review of project expenditures not included in APF funding. So there was no finding in the audit report about deficiencies in our expenditure review process related to APF funded projects. It was related to non-APF funded projects. Concerns about closeout of IT projects, as far as documentation of all milestones being reached and any risks closed out, as well as steps to implement an enforcement action if deemed necessary regarding suspenditure of projects. Again, that is at all levels of the oversight process, not just ITAC. Evaluating project outcomes. So that ties a little bit to the question that Ms. Pereira asked earlier and the answer I gave on that. We'll go into a little bit more details going forward. And then finding regarding the IVNV process. We have responded to this with a few actions. In the first action that ADOA Asset had started to implement before the audit report came out was a reorganization of our teams. So you heard today Donna Robbins do the roll call. Donna is the director of our portfolio team and has now taken over management of our engagement management team, which does most of the presentations to the ITAC committee on projects. The oversight team has been moved under Halle, who's our director of enterprise project management, as well as the oversight team. The intent there is to create more alignment between our best practices in our enterprise project management office, as well as this oversight team that helps guide agencies, not only through the pitch approval process, but also identifying risks and trying to overcome issues within projects. By making those changes, as well as the next step, which is we have initiated through our own internal process, is an actual project. Just like we manage an IT project, we have stood up a project team around the efforts to rectify some of the issues in the audit. We are believing we'll strengthen our internal processes, enhance a lot of efficiencies, have better security, ensure compliance with our standards, and overall improve the pitch process. The intent of all those benefits is the greater benefit, which is to help ourselves and the agencies get better outcomes within our IT projects. Next slide, please. So as I stated, we have initiated a project inside Asset. It was approved by our internal steering committee in July of this year. It's broken out in several different areas, which includes our rule updates, policy and procedure updates as needed, particularly focusing on the PIDGE audit findings that need correction, project oversight audit findings that need correction, third-party independent review, that IVNV I talked about, as well as any modifications that are needed to our digital system, which is our Salesforce CRM that runs our actual PIDGE and oversight processes with the agencies, and then obviously finding a way to report out our progress to the Auditor General's office. I'm not going to read into the details here, but hopefully you get an idea of how we split out the project. I can tell you at the beginning, we were at about 32 different requirements in this project identified, and we're past 38 now, specific requirements that we have to meet to consider this project complete. We have progressed through over 32% of those since the opening of the project in July. Next slide, please. As we go through this, you'll see some of the project impacts and responsibilities we have laid out for ADOA ourselves, are the tracking of the project milestones, reporting, communication, not only to our internal group, but to you as ITAC, the Auditor General, as well as our partnering agencies. Things that we're going to have to do with the agencies is help them understand an increased timeline. So for an example on that, we have changed our internal SLA to match our external SLA as processing pages. So we used to push ourselves to a seven business day review of a page to try and have efficiency and speed in the process. We've extended that out to match what we would promote to the agencies, which is 12 business days. So the team is now being measured against that 12 business day from submission for completing a review of a page and either approving it at the asset level or preparing it for approval at the ITAC level. A lot more frequent communications between us and the agencies. And then obviously we expect as we increase accountability and expectations within the pitch process, the agencies will have increased time commitment towards the pitch process. As far as ITAC, we'll be looking for committee feedback periodically on any changes that we either have made or intend to make, potentially some review of any policy changes that we want to make, and there could be some process changes that will actually ask for committee review and approval on. Next slide, please. So this is the breakdown of our schedule that we are working through. You can see that we're already in the development related to changing or updating our processes or even creating new processes. Those can turn into actual policy and standards that we issue out. We've initiated and started our request for modifications to the CRM to match these new processes and help create more efficiency for the agencies. We expect a follow-up audit to be conducted 5 to 6 months after the original release. So sometimes towards the end of this calendar year, we expect the Auditor General to come back and start communicating with us on what changes we've made, what recommendations we've implemented, which ones we're in progress with, and which ones we haven't started yet. And we've accounted for that in this schedule. Once we get that feedback from the initial follow-up report, we expect to go through the first two cycles over again to get in alignment with anything new the Auditor General has pointed out for us. Next slide, please. So what's success look like for us? As you can see, we're putting in a lot of new measures within our process. These measures aren't only for the agencies, but they're for ourselves. We are starting to track agency compliance with our status reporting process. Currently, we're at about 85% compliance. And what that means is out of all the projects that have status reports due, 85% of them are meeting our deadlines for that to be turned in. We've also created an escalation process for any status reports that are late, as far as how the initial team escalates to the agency, how the engagement manager is then brought in, and then how leadership within asset notifies the agency that they're out of compliance. Additionally, we've implemented a mandated closeout report process, and we're at about 90% compliance with that as our projects close out. I already stated we've increased our SLA with the agencies to allow ourselves for more quality review from 7 business days to 12, so that's a 5 business day increase. We have set a targeted schedule for any ITAC reviews that requires all pitches or change requests to be submitted to ADOA oversight 30 days before an ITAC meeting, with their presentation finalized 2 weeks before that meeting, and it has an escalation process adapted there. Other things that we've done is we've created a pitch violation process that agencies have been notified of. It's a 3-tier process. If an agency doesn't file a pitch on a project that should have, it has a communication from the statewide CIO out to the agency CIO, notifying that they've violated the pitch process and how to come into compliance. If the agency does it a second time, there is a notice from ADOA's director to the agency's head, notifying them of the violation, how to come into compliance. And if it happens a third time, an agency would be notified that their project is automatically temporarily suspended until they come into compliance. So those are some of the examples that we've walked through and put in place thus far. We still have a little ways to go in getting these recommendations implemented. I can say I think I kind of cruised past that at the beginning. ADOA did accept all recommendations from the Auditor General's office. The only nuance to that is ADOA is putting forward some requested changes to the IBNV statutes that would bring it more into alignment of how things are actually practiced today. Next slide. So that was a really quick overview. I left us plenty of time, Mr. Chairman, to answer some questions on what should be a pretty important topic for the committee.
Thanks for walking us through that, Chuck. Committee members, any points of interest or questions that you have? All right. With that, thanks, Chuck.
Mr. Chairman, if you don't have a direct question, I'd like to touch a little bit on the question that Ms. Pereira asked earlier and a little bit about outcome measurement.
Yes, I think it'd be a great one to cover for this group.
So one of the things that we've always done through the pitch process is ask agencies to tell us what their performance indicators are. However, we haven't put a robust process around defining what we think that looks like. Hopefully you've noticed over the past several months and even on today's that we are getting to very specific measurements that we're asking the agencies to give us at the close of their project, what does success look like for them, as well as some long-term measurements that we can look at to understand, was the investment meeting the intended result? And that's not just for ADOA, just for the agency, but it's also for our policymakers and budget groups that actually fund these things to have an understanding. So one of the processes, while I admit we haven't created it completely yet, that we're looking at is, even though we've closed out a project and we're not technically doing oversight, how do we engage the agencies to get those long-term measurements out of them and then report back? One of the things that we're cycling through in our thought process right now is to have the engagement team and the oversight team work together to calendar those projected outcomes based on project closure 6 months, a year out, and then do either semi-annual or quarterly reporting on all of the things that fall in that time frame out to this committee, as well as GILBC and some other bodies across the state. So it's something we're gonna have to work through, talk with the agencies on how it'll actually work and look, but we are definitely gonna come with an end product at the end of this project that says, here's how we're gonna measure things up to a year or possibly more after the investment was made and the project was closed, so that the people that approved it as well as funded it will have an understanding if we're getting the outcomes that we intended to.
Thanks for that additional explanation, Chuck. Again, if there's any questions for clarification. Okay, all right, that concludes our agenda for today. And our next meeting is scheduled for November 15th. Will be our pre-Thanksgiving edition. Do not dress up as a turkey, so. All right. Thanks, everybody. Appreciate your time today. Again, thank you for your commitment to this governance process and helping to ensure that we properly vet projects that are going forward in the state. Have a great afternoon.
Okay, team, let's go ahead and stop the presentation. The streaming and the recording.